When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Quit laughing.
I'm trying.
Welcome to Gola. I'm Katie Parla, a Rome-based food and beverage writer, culinary guide, and cookbook author.
And I'm Danielle Caligari, an assistant professor in Italian at Dartmouth College and a certified specialist of wine.
Ciao, Danielle. How's it going?
Ciao, Katie. Things are going pretty well, not least because we are getting tons of wonderful new Patreon supporters at our new support site, patreon.com/golapod. I am excited in particular about one of our newest supporters at the Giotto level, who is Lou Ann Savino O'Loughlin. We are so grateful to Lou Ann, as well as to our latest patron, Eric Scalavino, and to all of our patrons, as always. We add our special thanks to our friend Leah at Semolina Artisanal Pasta and Bobby at Mazzulla Pizza. And who else? Our best friends in Rochester. Hit them up, Katie.
Fiorella in Rochester. And Gabe Del Virginia in New Jersey. And we are so grateful for your generosity. We will never stop asking you to open your wallets, however. And we appreciate the support of Gola, but we also love to support other, well, Gola's not a charity, right? We want to support charitable causes that make a real impact, especially in the food space and especially in Italy, a place that we all love, a place where we love to think about pleasure and enjoying ourselves. But for a really deep understanding and a full, I think, respect of the culture, we also need to acknowledge the other realities that dwell within this space. And we have a really wonderful guest who is going to share her perspective on this very subject and more. We are joined today by the wonderful and intensely impressive Rossella Micio, who is affiliated, well, not just affiliated, that's an understatement. She is the president of Emergency and has been involved with this organization for well over a decade. Welcome, Rossella. We're so grateful for you to come here and talk to us about your work, the work of the organization, and some of the surprising things that you've been able to pivot in order to provide assistance during the pandemic for people. So welcome.
Thank you very much, particularly for this very warm welcome and introduction. I'm very glad to be with you today.
Thank you so much for being here. Can you sort of break down what Emergency is for people? Because it is such a well-known organization for its hospital and medical work all over the world, especially in Africa. And in fact, in Italy as well. But you guys do so much more. So can you sort of take us through some of the projects that you're working on and the sort of greater scope of your work?
Well, Emergency actually was started from Italy, from Milan, back in 1994. So we are celebrating our 27th anniversary this year.
Auguri.
Thank you. Grazie mille. So actually, in a few days, our birthday is May 15th. So we're almost there. And I mean, with quite a big impact, because we have been able to provide free of charge and high standard healthcare to over 11 million people worldwide. And this is, still a drop in the ocean, but it's starting to become a thick drop. And we're very proud because we've been able to do it thanks to the support and the participation of really millions of people. And everybody really gave its leader contribution to achieve this goal. So Emergency is really much more than just an NGO. It's a common project where many, many people are planting seeds. And we take care of growing them. Of course, we've been involved in a lot of war countries. We're still Afghanistan, Iraq, Cambodia, Sierra Leone, Sudan, Central African Republic. We have just opened a brand new hospital in Uganda, designed by pro bono, by Renzo Piano, who's the most famous Italian architect worldwide. And of course, we're very proud. The hospital is beautiful, of course. And it's already had a huge impact in the area and will provide services to patients not only from Uganda, but to children from the entire Africa. So it's a very ambitious project. But at the same time, we approximately 15 years ago, we realized that the same logics of the same logics of war, actually, were undermining also the rights and the welfare here in Italy, in our country. So we decided also to start clinical activities, social and clinical activities in Italy. And we have several clinics around the country that have been really one of the pillars of our response also last year during the COVID 19 outbreak. And actually, responding to this emergency crisis, we have also been pushed by the reality to start developing other projects that were quite unexpected for us, particularly in terms of food support for the people. So yeah, it's been a long journey, very diverse, but quite compelling.
So when I first learned about your work in Sardinia, I was a bit surprised. You know, when you think about Sardinia, there are these ideas of swimming in the sea, eating roasted pork. Those are synonymous with that experience, but that's a very superficial judgment of that island. So, you know, I think also on a sort of other level, when you think about food supply and medical availability in Italy, there is this perception from abroad that there is an abundance of food for everyone and there is socialized, available, and free medical care available to everyone. And that's not actually the reality. So can you speak a little bit to that and the work in Sardinia and how it relates?
Well, yeah, we let's say that we have a beautiful constitution that grants the right to healthcare, for example, to every individual, particularly the most vulnerable ones. This is, I mean, in theory, is true, but in practical terms, there are a lot of barriers that goes from the language to the social economical status that prevent actually particularly the most vulnerable to access those rights. And this is the reason why we started our activities with clinics in several regions, including Sardinia, actually, where we opened in Sassari. First, an information point, and then we expanded the activities to provide proper primary healthcare to migrants, but also Italians in need who have really difficulties in getting their healthcare services performed. And by doing that, actually, we realized how, let's say, there is over the past 15 years, I would say that the system in Italy has been really, how can I say, that the welfare system that has been one of the pillars of our democracy has been seriously affected by the economic crisis, the political decisions. And the last outbreak, the last pandemics has even increased, dramatically increased the number of people who could not really make their days or provide food for their families. And the social system, the social security system that was in place was not structured to respond to a sudden emergency. So we have met, starting from Milan, but then in many other regions, including Sardinia, unfortunately, a lot of people who lost their jobs and did not have, let's say, the paperwork ready to access all the social services provided by the municipality, the regional government, or the central government. So they were basically lost in this pandemic, and without really having any real having the opportunity to see the end at the light at the end of the tunnel, because we have seen that this outbreak has been really a continuous developing, worsening of the situation. Let's hope that now with the vaccination, the situation will improve. So we started just by delivering groceries to elderly people who were quarantined during the first lockdown in March last year. And then slowly, we realized that this was a much bigger need that went beyond the people who were quarantined, because a lot of people with, let's say, not regular jobs lost completely any possibility to work, or a lot of factories closed, restaurants, particularly in Italy, you know, that, tourism is really one of our main major drives of our economy, and was completely destroyed over the past 1 year. So really millions of people that found themselves suddenly in a totally unexpected situation. And therefore we decided that we had to do an extra effort to meet their needs, and at least to tell them, okay, we can provide you in this emergency situation the necessary food you need to take care of your family, and you can, let's say, devote your energy and resources to look for another job or to find a solution to other problems. But the food is there, which is a key, element. And we have provided more than 90,000 food boxes that accounts to approximately 2.5 million meals over the last year so far in several Italian cities.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And so speaking of that, Rossella, how does your apparatus work? You know, you're talking about huge numbers, and the kinds of numbers that people, I think, especially our listeners, are really excited to hear, because it makes you feel like if you give to an organization like yours, you're going to see results and people will actually be able to reap the benefits of that care and that attention. So how do you manage that? Because infrastructurally, that has to be just a massive undertaking, even in a place like Italy that does ostensibly have, you know, the essence of that infrastructure.
Yeah, it has been a huge challenge, honestly speaking, because it was a field totally unknown for us. So we really had to think out of the box and try to readjust perhaps not only our priorities, but also our logistic systems. Thank God we can count on a very broad net of volunteers all around Italy. And so they have been our the arms of this project. And this allowed us also to interact with other organizations and civil society groups who joined efforts. So we were like the catalyst for a lot of positive energy of people who wanted to help. So we even registered an increase of our volunteers, because new people came and decided. But at the same time, we had to readjust all our warehouses systems. So rent a new warehouse that was used to stock the supplies for the hospitals overseas, because that activity has to continue. And we are using our two main warehouses in Milan and Rome as hubs for the preparation of the boxes that are then delivered in those cities and to other groups of volunteers in other cities, from Napoli to Catanzaro, Pavia, and now we started also in Sicily last week in Catania.
So speaking of the geographic expansion that you're talking about is something that Katie and I wanted to get into, I know. Do you see recently or historically regions that have needed more help? and sub-regions that are maybe unexpectedly in need of help. You mentioned, you know, for example, emergency starts in Milan. Milan is not a city that, of all the spaces in Italy that we would associate with food insecurity and with a lack of a welfare program for its citizens, Milan is the lowest on the list, right? The assumption is Milan is wealthy, well-to-do, structurally intact, et cetera, et cetera. But, and yet the roots of your program are there. And so, you know, both is, has there been a general trend in certain areas, and are there places that you unexpectedly serve very frequently despite stereotypes to the contrary?
Well, this was our surprise, actually, because we were not expecting such a huge need in a city like Milan. For the reasons you said, because both, I mean, it's a very economically active city. The engine of Italian economy is here. But at the same time, because the municipality, I mean, the social services, public social services are very well developed. So we were surprised, but as a matter of fact, that there were really a lot of business that closed due to the pandemic. So really a huge number of people lost their income and their jobs really suddenly, totally unexpectedly. And the problem is that all the social system services are based on, let's say, an income evaluation that is based on your tax statement, which, I mean, is a photography of your previous year income. So it doesn't have, I mean, this is something that we realized. We have a system that is very well developed, but too rigid to respond to this kind of emergencies, both when it comes to food security, to social services, but also to healthcare services. So the hospitals were completely packed and went upside down because that there was not a very resilient health system in this point of view. So what we have seen is that big cities, even unexpectedly, have been more affected than small, let's say, villages or towns, whatever. That perhaps the south of Italy, even if, let's say, generally speaking, is more in need, perhaps there were some informal solidarity network that helped more people to cope with this situation, while in large cities, suburbs, people were really left alone. So we decided to start in Milan and then go to Rome for this reason, because the peripheries of these large cities, of these metropolis, were really the areas most affected by the outbreak, by the pandemic consequences.
On the subject of isolation, especially social isolation, I was very interested to learn about your psychological field assistance with agriculture workers in Sicily, which is a topic that barely gets attention or, I would imagine, funding. So can you talk about how that program developed and how it's implemented?
Yeah, we psychological support is embedded in our clinic's work all around Italy. But particularly, we developed this psychological support for migrants in different areas. Sicily is one of them, where we have a lot of people that are employed regularly or irregularly in the agriculture, in the agricultural field. And for them to have someone that is properly taking care of them, of their needs as human beings, really, not just as arms that are used to grow our tomatoes or the cucumbers or the eggplants, like in Sicily, has been something that was kind of revolutionary for them. We work in this area close to Ragusa, which is called Area Trasformata, because it's a very long and wide strip of land facing the sea that has been transformed into serre, greenhouses, And there are people who spend 24/7 inside the greenhouses, not being able to learn the language, not being able to interact with other people around, not even knowing what are the services, the social and health services that they are entitled to. So with a mobile clinic, we moved the clinic in several villages, and we have a doctor, but also a cultural mediator and a psychologist that are really trying to take care of these people, their families' needs.
That's an incredible program. And I think what, you know, as Katie was asking you that question, it was reminding me of one of the things that we often talk about on the podcast, which is the role that food plays in terms of creating and sustaining social bonds. And one of the kind of great tragedies of the COVID pandemic in particular has been the fact that people have not been able to be together, and that we don't often really understand the value of that in our lives. It's an intangible that is hard to put a price on or even to find the contours of. And finding ways to use food for that is a typical one, but then seeing that in place at the level of agriculture in a much more actual literal sense is kind of an incredible layering of that space. The idea that of how food and social interaction work together and are so crucial. I know that, Rosalia, you don't have a ton of time with us, so we don't want to take up, speaking of people whose time is valuable, but I do want to make sure that we get to the ways that people can support the activity that you're talking about here. And money is one thing for sure, and we will make sure that everyone knows how to donate, and they'll get all of the links in the show notes here to Emergency via social media and your website, as well as your donation structure. But are there ways that people can give beyond that, especially maybe ways that aren't immediately apparent to us?
Well, yes. I mean, particularly if you have people in Italy who would like to or are listening to the podcast and would like to join us, become volunteers, it is something that absolutely is more than welcome. Then any kind of event, for example, that can help spreading the awareness about the work that we're doing and particularly the issues that we are dealing with is absolutely welcome. I mean, we are very much involved with students in the schools, so it's we're always happy to be able to share what we are seeing worldwide and what we are also thinking and exchanging views, because we think that it's only by being real citizens that we can contribute all together to the well-being of our communities, no?
Absolutely.
So yeah, please go ahead on our website, get in touch with our contact persons, and the contacts are on the website, and come up with any kind of idea to spread the news and support us. Thank you.
Well, we are grateful for all that you do. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and our listeners, no doubt, thank you as well.
Thank you very much to you, and have a good day.
Ciao.
Grazie mille, Rosella. And we remind everybody in Angola that they can find out more about what we're doing at Katie Parla, at Dr. Caligari's Cabinet, and I believe Emergency is at emergency.ong on Instagram. Check it out, find out more, reach out to us, and we will put you in touch if you have any challenges finding it yourself, although Google will do the job for you. Get out there and remember that caring about food and enjoying food is something that you can do in a really conscious way. It makes us happy to be a part of that with you and to keep spreading that message, as Rosella has reminded us. Grazie e arrivederci.
Ciao, ciao.